You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast with host Fifi Peters.
In today's personal finance feature, we are looking at planning financially for a critical illness. And we are doing this with a certified financial planner who was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer at the age of 31 and walked the financial path they will be enlightening us on today. I'm joined by Duan Cronier. And Duan, thanks so much for your time, sir. So quite a traumatic experience to be diagnosed with such a serious level of cancer at such a young age. Can you just share your initial reactions with us and whether you are okay right now?
Sure, yes. Thanks, Fifi. Thanks for the opportunity to share my story. I have good news. I'm currently in remission. It's been a bit of a journey. Obviously, getting the diagnosis at the, kind of mid last year, it shook our world. Me and my wife, we're a young family. Last thing you think about is actually being diagnosed with something like cancer, or any sort of critical illness. It definitely shook our world a bit. I was probably lucky in the sense that I didn't have too many options. The doctors pretty much said, "This is your plan. This is what we're going to do," and we kind of headed straight into it.
And it's absolutely fascinating, and I'm glad that you're doing okay. It is quite the journey, and perhaps the best point of departure is the starting phase, particularly for you, upon hearing this traumatic news. What was your point of departure in terms of how to react financially for this?
Yeah, so, reflecting back on the journey, it all happened so quickly, from being diagnosed to starting with the treatment and, seeing the oncologist and moving into radiation and chemo and into the operations. It all happened very, very quickly. My first reaction was pretty much, is my will up to date? Is that according to my wishes? Should I have a living will in place? Do I have my general power of attorney sorted out? All of these thoughts rush onto you. So I think that was pretty much my first thought was to go in that route to be sure that everything's fine, if worst case scenario comes
sure.
to show. And then it pretty much went into, I knew I had my cover in place for critical illness. Once I had the time to kind of digest what happened, it was pretty much just going into the claim phase, get all the documents that I needed to get to, sign everything, get all the reports from the doctors and pretty much submit it. And then kind of wait for the payout to happen. Obviously for my wife and I, you don't really plan on driving up and down to the doctors every day. I wouldn't say that's part of a general budget for whomever, especially working from home most days. Suddenly having to pay for, let's call it 7 or 8 tanks of diesel in a month, that was kind of unplanned expenses that came across us. Any sort of emergency funding we had in place, that was pretty much wiped out fairly quickly, and then being very happy that we had the cover in place to kind of replenish that once the pair happened.
Let's talk about that cover. You said that you had a critical illness cover in place. Tell us more about critical illness cover and what it looks like.
Yeah, so I had critical illness cover in place in my personal capacity and with my employer. Not many employers actually offer critical illness, but if you have that with your employer, that's great to have that with the group cover. But it's essentially just a long-term insurance policy that gives you a lump sum payout, if you were to contract a critical illness. I think something worthy to note is that you do have different levels of critical illness cover, ranging from your simple cover to your elite cover, which covers everything. I think the point here is, to always go for the comprehensive cover if you can afford it. Then you won't have any troubles with the amount of payouts or everything, and you'll just be sure you get 100% payouts, which I think is, that peace of mind is quite important.
No, for sure. But on average, in terms of exactly how much this kind of cover costs, if you can just give us some ranges.
Yeah, so obviously it depends on quite a few factors. Some of them include age, gender, education, previous previous sicknesses you might have had. So I mean, my best answer I can give is what I paid for my insurance cover, and I was in my personal name. I had a couple of hundred thousand rands worth of insurance, and you know, for me as a 50-year-old at that stage, or I think probably my late 20s when I took out the cover, you know, I think that was about 300-400 rand, give or take, for that. I think maybe on that point, it's also just good to note that, you know, I reconned my medical aid as well, just to check, you know, what I have actually submitted as claims to my medical aid and to my gap cover. And, you know, just based on that, it's almost 700,000 rand worth of claims already submitted. So I think that's, as a number to, you know, to start off with, I think if you don't have medical aid and gap cover, that certainly should be a number you should be looking at.
Sure, and I can tell you that not a lot of people have 700,000 rand just sitting in an account for emergency exactly, purposes. Yeah. But so you mentioned medical aid and gap cover, and I was going to ask about those two, because essentially you had those two types of cover on top of critical illness cover. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So I mean, essentially, I think you should start with medical aid and gap cover. That should be your starting point. And you should know what benefits you have, or what your plan covers, your medical aid plan. So I mean, I was lucky that my specific medical aid had very good cover with oncology benefits or cancer benefits. And I was also actually quite lucky to have it for over two calendar years. So, you know, my benefits reset at the start of the year. You know, so what I would have had to pay from my own pocket or submit to gap cover, you know, was actually quite small relative to what it could have been.
You mentioned that your employer actually offered critical illness cover. And so I just want further clarity to say, if your employer actually doesn't, is this something that you'd advise one to take on separately?
Yes, certainly. I guess it will still be dependent on your personal situation. I mean, your need for your risk cover depends quite a bit on, you know, what your options are for, you know, either if you're self-insuring or whether you have your group cover in place or whether you're going for individual cover. So, you know, an individual with, you know, hundreds of millions of rand in cash, you know, their need for risk cover is slightly lower than someone that has maybe 100,000 rand in cash available, where if something like this were to happen to them, they'll have quite a big need. So I think, again, just knowing what cover you have in place, you know, most employers offer you life cover and income protection. So if you want critical illness, more often than not, you'll have to speak to a financial advisor and get yourself quotations and cover amounts and get that cover in place.
Mm-hmm. And at the start, when we started this conversation, you told us, I mean, you were already thinking worst case scenario. So you had a bit of relief in the form of knowing that your will and your estate plan was well thought out, was put in place. Your beneficiaries were selected, and that part of the process was done. So, I mean, we do know historically that not a lot of South Africans have got wills. In fact, I believe it's still at around less than 15% of us draw that up. So as a worst case scenario planning, you obviously would suggest that one needs to have a will in place.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think you really want to go down the route of dying interstate without a will. So definitely have your will in place. You know, be mindful of your beneficiary nominations on your investments if you have an investments in place. You know, two documents that I was prompted to look at upon diagnosis was one a living will and one a general power of attorney, which I luckily both put in place fairly quickly. But a living will is essentially just, you know, it provides your family and your doctors some communication on your wishes if you were in a, you know, persistent vegetative state or irreversible coma. So that certainly helps. And then a general power of attorney. Now, this was one of the first things I put in place was for my wife to be able to sign on my behalf, you know, for those days where, you know, the medication was a bit too much for me or anything like that, if I needed someone to sign on my behalf. So I think, you know, between a will, your beneficiary nominations, and possibly a living will and general power of attorney, I think if you have all those in place, that's a very good start.
You also mentioned the emergency fund and all the unplanned expenses that you incurred, the drives to and fro from the doctor, the petrol, the price that you had to incur as a result also of petrol prices going up in this time, and you making more journeys than you had expected. But I just would like to understand, I mean, as you're thinking of an emergency fund, what's a good amount to have saved?
I mean, we as financial planners, we generally advocate for between 3 to 6 months worth of expenses in an emergency fund. You know, so if you were to lose your job, you'd be able to give yourself some breathing space for, let's call it 3 to 6 months, if you were to lose your income. I think for important for an emergency fund, it is has to be easily accessible. So it's usually a savings account or a cash type investment. And for those that still have bonds and you have an access bond, I think it's a good place to keep it there as well. But no, I think the amount 3 to 6 months worth of your expenses covered and then easily accessible.
I mean, other than the unplanned trips to the doctor, what are some of the other unplanned expenses that you incurred along the way?
Yeah, so this was quite an interesting one. The one I immediately think of as your asked question was actually milk. Mm. So as part of my diagnosis and my all the medication stuff I had to do, and one of the operations I had to get was get a permanent stoma bag. And the stoma bag is quite sensitive to the type of food you put into your body. So something small like going from, full fat milk or, 2% milk to almond milk, which is eventually where I ended up on. Mm. Now that's pretty much three times the price of standard milk. So that was something that I had to be conscious of as well. And, also just because of the radiation, the location of the radiation on my body, something I had to do as well was fertility testing and, freezing semen. So that was something that medical aid nor gap cover paid for. So that had to come from my own pocket. Being quite young, family is still one of my priorities. So that's something that we had to get in place as well. So I think two of those, as I mentioned, I think is something people don't tend to think of, obviously, along with it in my own.
Mm. And also, it was interesting to learn that, I mean, you were talking about power of attorney a little bit earlier, but even in terms of managing the accounts and paying for some of these unplanned expenses. So you are advising that obviously someone that you trust, perhaps in your case it was your wife, has the information on how to access the money, the PINs and all the other details of the accounts.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that made life quite a lot easier for me specifically during this journey. It includes quite a lot of things, making food or house chores, general house chores, even just walking out the house, in that first week after chemo, that wasn't something I was able to do, so never mind getting to keeping track of expenses or driving up and down to get, checking my diary for where I had to go. The only thing you think of is pretty much lying down. So having someone you trust is very important, whether that be your spouse or a family member or just your roommate or whoever. I think it is quite important for at least one person to know this in case of an emergency, or even your financial planners, if they have a way to get to your investments or to get in contact with someone that you trust, then that's also a good idea.
Mm-hmm. So, Don, obviously we're talking about your journey through fighting cancer, and it's absolutely, I think it's really insightful because you're giving us the first take, a personal view based on a journey that you walked yourself, but this can extend to any form of critical illness. Should one suffer a stroke or heart attack or any other a critical condition that they haven't planned for. But if we sum it up and if you just leave us with some key takeaways on how to better plan for the unplanned when it comes to health, what would those be?
It would have to be proactive. If you're going to be reactive on planning for any type of health crisis, then it's already too late. So I think a good starting point is obviously speaking with a qualified financial planner. They should be able to help you anticipate and plan for these type of unplanned events and set those things in place that need to be in place. When you look at your financial plan, it kind of optimizes over four areas, which is your cash flows, your investments, your risks, and your legacy planning. So having someone help you optimize each of those four areas, I think, is a it gives you peace of mind, and I think that's always a good place to be.
All right. John, we'll have to leave it there. But thank you so much for sharing your journey with us, and we wish you continued health. John Cronje, he is a certified financial planner.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app, and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.